illegal on that beach. Mayor, we've waved many times from your balcony to us walking on the beach. There are a lot of people, not only Loggerhead Court, and the people north of the walkway, Alicia and Enrich and Kevin, and then the people across the street on the west side of Atlantic, south of our properties, that use that walkway to get over. So there's many, many people, different times of the day. My unit faces directly to that walkover. I can see from my unit, from my balcony, who's using the walkover, and all different times of the day, just not in the morning when I walk, but there's a lot of people that do their 5 p.m. walk just for exercise because it's cooler in that part of the day. So I am all in favor, as a taxpayer, yeah, and as a member of CSA, I'm paying for this walkover either way, okay? Both sides. And I'm not opposed to it. There hasn't been a lot of maintenance on that beach. There hasn't been a lot of turnover of the boards on that boardwalk. I meant the boardwalk, not the beach. It's been neglected for 20 years. And it's time to be rebuilt. And it's time to make it safe and all-inclusive for the whole neighborhood. And one more thing I want to add, Bill. You said, what happens when a hurricane comes and it gets knocked down? Well, I'd like something else added in there. If the ADA ramp is knocked down, it has to be rebuilt as a ramp, not as stairs, which doesn't accommodate or make the beach for everybody. If you look at some communities now, not only do they have ramps, they put down a small chain link fence, not a big chain, not the big loop, but a smaller loop. So people that are in electric carts, wheelchairs, can actually go out onto the sand. Okay, so they can get back and forth. You can push the wheelchair. It's happening in Melbourne. It's happening in the places south of us, because the communities, the councils are realizing that people with disabilities can access the beach like everybody else. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burge. Kathy?
Kathleen Harvey, 41 Loggerhead. Okay, Loggerhead's been mentioned a couple times. So I just want to add something, Bill. A lot of people don't know that in 1990, when Loggerhead Dunes was created, there were 25 parcels, 25 residents. Each one of those has deeded access to a private pathway that is between the Jacobs and the Patton's home. So when we come down the little ramp there off of Loggerhead, we don't need to use the boardwalk area, the new one. We can, we do, but it's not a lot. And mostly it's guests and things like that. But it is a nice access. But I'm not a fan of the new design. The other one had more of a rampish reduction, like as it came down in a slope and there'd be a step and, you know, ADA better. Now, the steps are wide. They're steep. There's handrails on both sides. I'm still helping people lift things up and carry. It's just, it's not ease of access. People have their little bags. They want to have a picnic or something. They can't. I mean, it's too heavy, too cumbersome. So if it were ADA compliant, that makes sense. If it's not, it doesn't. I mean, it's just my opinion.
Thank you. Thank you. Tony.
Tony Hines, 4621 South Atlantic, Unit 7703. One observation is the county walkovers are clearly marked with signage that indicates it's a public crossover. There is no signage on this walkover. I might kind of question how many people know it really is public. Daytona Beach Shores, I know, and I think Daytona Beach, have requirements like this for developers to provide beach access. How do they handle maintenance, and how did they handle recovery in the hurricane? Might be something worth knowing.
Thank you. Yes, Jim.
Jim Suster, 4650 Links North. I walked that every morning, and we were told that every day that their boards are being changed and that it's in, the maintenance is very good. The place, there's no boards that have been changed, just to let you guys know that right now. But when Rick and Jeff were telling you, they said that they're going to redo the entire boardwalk plus the T that goes onto our private property. How are they going to differentiate the money that you allocate to them, what's used for the public access and what's used for their private access? Because if they're going to do the whole thing, you guys could be possibly paying money for our private access, such as the railing, which has been deteriorating for 20 years. So there, when you say percentages, how are they going to say, okay, just the public walkover is worth this much, and the T is worth this much, so we're only asking you for this much. Cove Points is going to give them one total fee for the entire project. And your money is going to the entire project, which includes private walkway and the railing. So it's just something to think about, because I don't know how they're going to differentiate that money. I'm all for this thing, because when the wind blows, we get an assessment at that place. But I just want to make sure that you guys know that when they give you a full price, it's going to also be for the private area. Thanks.
Thank you. Would you like to address that?
Respond to that one, please. First of all, and we can certainly give it to you if you need it, but Cove Points has broken out the different money amounts for us. They've broken out into the public area, which is $91,950. They've broken out the private area in a separate invoice, and we also have the railings and fences broken out in a separate invoice. So they have all been broken out, and we're not trying to steal from you guys. So just so you know, and we will have that available if you require that.
And the railings are a different vendor to begin with.
Yep.
That's number one. Number two, as far as the boardwalk itself and the substructure underneath it that has been replaced, it's pretty obvious that it's new wood. And it's pretty obvious where we've had to do new boards and screw boards back in and make adjustments to it. Our maintenance staff is on it on a regular basis, okay. Period.
All right. So thank you.
Thank you. There was another, I think, a question in the back. Yes, Chair.
Hi, Jer Kessler, 81 Bushman Drive. I just wanted to say, as a resident of Ponce Inlet, until I attended a town meeting a couple of months ago, I didn't even know it was public access. So for those who live in immediate vicinity, you know that. But I do think if you support this, it should be made clear to other residents, because I don't live that far, and I know I've been on the beach sometimes when I wanted to get off the beach, and didn't think I could go up that because I thought it was not public access.
Thank you, Jer. Yes.
I'm Nancy Breedlove, 4670 Links Village Drive. Personally, I've watched a lot of this over periods of time. And I don't feel it's in the best interest of the town to support this. And I live there and I can be assessed, but there's 17 homes on Loggerhead Court. People that live on the ocean with homes, with the exception of a couple of them to the north of us, they have their own access to the beach. There's also, there will be again soon, two handicap accessible parks to access this from. One of them is Winter Haven, and the other one is the parking space at Ocean View. Those two are a lot more conducive to putting in handicap availability with ramps because there's so little slope. There's very little slope. I think that the stairway and having the back and forth to get down to the beach level is going to be cost prohibitive. Whereas with the other one, it will be very little planking needed. I believe there's an 8-degree change that you have to have for every 16 feet of ramp. And so they could easily do a ramp down at Ocean View with two pieces of wood. Whereas with us, it would just be huge. And with 17 homes on Loggerhead, I have a hard time accounting for 50% of the population of Ponce. And I mean, I live there, but I personally don't think it's fair. I don't think it's necessary because it's from that stairway, it's 360 paces to Ocean View, and it's 380 paces to Winter Haven. So it's not like we're talking about they're going to have to make a long road trip to get from one point to the other. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes. Sorry.
Doris Hines, 4621 South Atlantic Avenue. I just want to caution about setting precedents. This may be totally unrelated, but I remember the retaining wall being replaced by the city down on Tina Marie Court. And like I said, it may be totally different circumstances, but again, that appeared to be my taxpayer dollars doing something on private property. So just beware of precedents and perception.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? So I'm going to ask the council right now how you would like to proceed. We've had our public participation. We've had our questions answered. We know that we're not going to go beyond if Harbor Village has made it clear that it's unrealistic for them to have an ADA beach ramp. We know that that is something that we would like, and we need to find out from our attorney to do the homework on the issue that we now have. If it's not ADA compliant, are we even allowed to make any contributions? That's number one. Number two, Doris Hines brings an excellent point, which I think we just need to say it out loud, is that I don't believe we're putting money into private property without a public benefit. You see, that might be the difference that we have, but I appreciate you saying, and I would want to make that very clear to everybody if we were to make the contribution, is that the public benefit exists. Now, the extent of the public benefit, we really don't know, because as was explained, if you're talking 300, I don't know how many paces north, 300 whatever paces south, and you already have access there, how large is the public benefit and for the number of people? So we have a few things to think about, and I think my suggestion would be, because no matter what, we're waiting until the next council meeting, and I apologize to our applicants for this, but I think that what we may need to do is take what we've heard from all the residents. I think we have to think it through very carefully. And when we learn whether we can even do it, if we can do it, if we can make a contribution,
without ADA, we have to ask ourselves, A, do we even want to? But B, if we do want to, how much will it be? I mean, right. Because then we can answer all the questions.
And again,
what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and Mayor, I think you're heading down the right path, and I just think we table this until we get the answers that we need.
We have to have it. I mean, my concern is that we do it right and we do what we're legally allowed to do. And there's no other way of going at it. It's not something that we can say, here's a check.
Nope.
You know, it just can't happen. We have to know that there's nothing down the road that's going to hurt us, and I'm really interested about that FEMA part.
Okay, well, and we will look into the FEMA. We can look into the FEMA, but I still believe that if we give them the money, we relinquish our right to anything, unless maybe we draft things in a particular way.
But we need to know that.
Right. Well, they'll look into it. They will look into that. So we have two major issues for ourselves, but what was important to me is that we had the public discussion. We have quite a few things to think about. At one end of the spectrum, we're talking about a staff recommendation of 25%. We have individuals telling us how many people are really using it and the public benefit. They could walk a bit up or a bit back, north or south, and still be able to get on the beach. We have a few things to think about. And I appreciate the discussion. Is there any other points that anybody would like to make that have not been made? Because the council will be thinking about this, and hopefully we'll have a legal opinion soon enough to be helpful. Yes.
Jim Suster, 4650 Links Village Drive. And just another thing, it's like a lot of us live in condos all over here, and when there's major projects, they have a reserve for that amount of money, for funds. It might be wise to ask them, for the last 20 years, was there a reserve for this walkover? Because if you're not having a reserve for something and then just say, well, let's get it from the city, you know what I mean? Everybody knows that when you live in a condo, right now, you have to have reserves for major projects. That boardwalk is a major project that should have a reserve. It probably does. I'm not sure. Something to ask them if they have a reserve for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Was there... yes.
Nancy Braidlove, 4670 Links Village Drive. I should have asked this before. But first of all, if this were to be approved, there would be, we'd be required to have handicap parking spaces because right now there's no parking whatsoever. So would parking be required? Because what's the purpose of doing this if people can't get there and park?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting point because there are facilities there, and they're parking things, but that really wasn't part of this. We could certainly, if we're talking about having a discussion with Harbor Village, is that depending on the percentage, the higher the percentage, one would think that perhaps it would be nice to have parking, but it wouldn't be appropriate for me to be negotiating anything right now. But so your question, though, and that may be an attorney question, is, would Harbor Village be required to provide at least one parking space if we were to give funds? Because there's parking. How many parking spaces? I'm sorry?
I'm not sure how many are there right now. There's, I believe, one handicap, but it's gated. You have to have
right.
a key fob to get in. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, is if it's ADA, I'm not sure how far that goes. But would they be required to open the restrooms up to people? Whereas down at Winter Haven, they have very nice handicap accessible restrooms. And I'm just saying that. I guess I'm being more budget conscious.
Well, I appreciate the points you're raising, and I am looking at our attorney, and he's writing it down. So
that's something that I can include in
he will. Because we want to do it right.
Right.
We want to do it right.
Right. It's just how much would Harbor Village have to give up in order to have that.
That is very well said. How much would Harbor Village have to give up, if anything, if we were to contribute money? That is the question.
Correct.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That was good. There was another woman back here with a question. Was there someone else back here with a question?
It was the same.
Same question?
It was ADA.
Oh, you have to please come up. No, no, we need to get your name. I'm so sorry. We want to meet you. We would love to meet you. Come on. Your name and, yeah, thank you.
Andrea Kemp. I live in River's Edge in Harbor Village.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea.
If it's ADA and we have to give up parking spaces, we only have 10 underneath there. And it's also private. So if you give people access, then everybody's going to be in there. So I don't understand how we could even do that.
We don't know if that would even be an obligation on the part of Harbor Village
to do
anything.
Well, that's what I was asking,
so
is if it's ADA, do we are required to have...
We'll find that out, but yeah, okay.
Oh, all right, thank you.
Thank you. We wanted, if whatever we do, we want to do it right, and we want to cover, we don't want unintended consequences for Harbor Village, nor for the town. Is that it? Okay, so do you need a motion from us to table this until the next council meeting, which is June 18th?
If you want to, yeah, if you want to specify a date, I'm sure.
I think so, because I know that you want to move things along. When is the next council meeting? Is it the 18th?
20th.
What?
June 20th.
20th, okay. Okay, so I move to table agenda item 13A, request for cost participation from Harbor Village CSA until the town's council meeting on June 20th, 2024.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Yeah, Mayor, can I just add a couple things? Just to explain, yeah, staff was not making a recommendation per se on that amount. Is more of a suggestion. If you're kind of struggling to have a basis,
okay,
you know, that could be one. You know,
well,
ultimately,
it's
going to come down to what the council is comfortable with. You know, you could look at it that way if it's just throw out an amount. Another thing, I did want to speak to the Tina Marie Wall situation. That was a very different situation, and that we did research that extensively before bringing that to this council for a budget request. It turned out that wall was in the public right-of-way. You know, so it therefore became the town's obligation to fix. If you remember, that wall was made out of wood. It was leaning quite a bit. The adjacent property owner had brought that to the town's attention, you know, that there could be a safety issue there. And so we felt it was our obligation to do that.
Mike, thank you. And I appreciate you clarifying, because I misspoke. It's not a recommendation of the staff. What it was just an explanation that if you look at the 25%, so we're certainly not bound by the staff's recommendation. We have our independent review and analysis and our own, the public's contribution. So, Mike, thank you for that. Okay? I think we all know that. All right. Now we are at agenda item 13B, and 13B is a discussion on Florida Department of Emergency Management's Florida Recovery Obligation Calculation Program. Mike?
Yeah, Chief Scales is going to present this one.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of Council. I was tasked from last council meeting to get some additional information on the FROC program. I think Councilmember White's the one that really brought it to our attention.
Sorry.
Appreciate that. And I'm going to try and simplify it as best I can, because it does look kind of complex, but it actually is quite simple. The best analogy that I could make is this is equivalent to what accreditation would be for our disaster procurement process. What Florida has done is they've taken the FEMA program guidelines and standards, brought them together, put together an evaluation program where a municipality will supply Florida Department of Emergency Management with all of their procurement information, disaster information, and evaluate it against the program guidelines from FEMA. Once that's done, they'll provide you with what's called an abatement plan, which says, hey, you've got all these things, but you're missing these pieces here. And then you come up with that plan, you put those pieces together, you provide that to the state of Florida, and whatever additional training is required. And once that's all done, you're basically given a score, and the score outline is here in my memo. And basically what that means is if there is a disaster, you're eligible for a percentage of reimbursement up front, and it's much, much simpler. You're not going through all the hoops and all the different paths that you normally would go through. It just standardizes the whole process. On the surface, it looks very simple, and I don't think it's terribly complex. I've talked with the folks at the Department of Emergency Management. I know Volusia County Emergency Management's also going through it, so there's other folks that we can work with to help get us through this process. But it's a new program. It's a new thing that we would be doing, and I do think there's benefit in it, and I do think the town should start the program, which means we would have to opt in by June 1st of this year. There's no cost. And we would have until October to have our disaster recovery assessment done into the state of Florida. So it sounds like it's a good chunk of time, but also it's in the middle of hurricane season, and it's also in the middle of budget. So there's a lot of other activities that will be going on at the same time. Doesn't mean that we can't do it. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. I just want to be clear that as much benefit as this program would bring the town, and it would bring the town, there's an issue of capacity. And as much as we've grown over the few years, we're still very small. And our finance department is still very small and does a lot of stuff. And the reality is, a lot of this will fall on finance. I will assure you, I will do everything I can do, and my staff will do everything we can do to help ease that burden. But at the end of the day, it is a finance procurement role. So I just want to put that out there. We are happy to do this. I think there's definite benefits. And obviously, the first part is always, the first time you do it is always the roughest, because you're always missing parts and pieces. Once we get through this first process, it's about maintaining going forward. So this isn't something that's a one and done. It's just like police department accreditation, just like fire department accreditation, or just like my credentialing for some of the certifications I have. You do it the first time, you know what the guidelines are, and it's a process after that every year. So that's as simply as I can boil it down for you. If you have any more questions beyond that, I'm happy to discuss that.
I just have a question. Is the benefit significant to opting in?
I think it is, and I'll tell you why. Unfortunately, I've been doing this a long time, been through a lot of hurricanes, and been through many, many FEMA processes. And the one common theme of that is, the one consistency is inconsistency. And every time a storm comes in, it's a different way of doing things. And FEMA does it a little bit different here, a little bit different there. They've really tried, FEMA has tried very hard, and I know the state of Florida has tried very hard to standardize that process, because it's super inefficient for the federal government as much as it is for the state government. So yes, having a standardized program or system for disaster recovery funds or requesting those funds, I think is a huge benefit. It's not perfect, but I think it is a benefit.
When I read this, I couldn't see any reason to not, except of course capacity, you know, and having people do the work. But it seems to me as if we're being handed a framework that, even though we're going to struggle a little bit the first year, it's like anything else, is that we're going to get better at it.
And Mayor, I had a conversation before I even brought this to council last month, but with Elizabeth Kaysen, and Elizabeth is actually the regional that I know Dan spoke with. And I had a conversation with Michael before I brought it to council last time, and Mike and I talked about it, and the first concern that we had was man hours. Yeah. And, you know, I have something more for that later. But, you know, I talked to Elizabeth, and the first thing I told her, I said, you know, I need some selling points on this. I need something, because I think it's a wonderful program. The Florida League of Cities, this was on their webinar, and this is where I picked up on it. But I said, Elizabeth, you know, we're a small town. we struggle with, and again, sorry, pardon my term, but that's my old business term, man hours. And, you know, help me with this. She said, Skip, once you qualify, and she said, you already have the information to qualify and sign up for this program, which gets us to the 20% level. She said, all you have to do, and I'm making it sound very simple, Kim, so please don't hit me. She said, all you have to do, you can tell Jane, she'll get me when I get home. But all we have to do is compile that information, put it in their format, and get it to them. And we're qualified. That makes it sound very easy, Kim. I know that. But we compile the data. We present it in their forms, and we're in. If we don't do this at the qualifying date, and I tried to find it, and I couldn't do it. Dan, you mentioned it. But we would. This is to qualify for 2025. 2024 is over. There's nothing we can do to get into 2024. This gets us started for 2025. And then Elizabeth's comment was, then you can do it at your own pace.
Okay.
So I know it's a lot of work, and Kim will probably never talk to me ever again, and I hope you will. But, you know, there's method to my madness here, and I won't speak about it right now, but I really hope we support this program.
Well, I think it's an excellent program. I do. And we apologize in advance for the extra work, but it certainly sounds as if maybe it's something that if we were to do this, that it's actually going to help us in the future. So that's Bill?
Well, as I looked at it, I was going through the four pillars and going through each one of those pillars, and I'm looking at it, and it says, oh, gee, instead of getting 5% reimbursement up front, you can get an 80%. And then I went looked a little further, and you talked about the work. And the work is easier or simpler once you get it, but getting it is going to be extremely difficult. And Kim, you know, what they got to do in the finance department? Mm-hmm. So I know with your help, can we do that without killing them is my only concern. Can we get it done and feel comfortable that we're not overburdening? Because I think this is great. I mean, when I read 80%, and we're still waiting for money from, what, how many years ago? When Ian, whatever, and one before that? We still haven't gotten all the money. So this definitely makes a heck of a lot of sense.
Well, I guess if I could add to that, there's no cost. It's not like we sign up and we pay
money. That
was
one of my questions.
None.
Mm-hmm. I had a question mark next to zero.
No cost.
But there is a cost.
Yeah,
well,
cost
getting
to that.
It ready up front.
Let me get to that.
Okay.
There's no direct cost.
Yeah.
June 1st is when we have to opt in. What is the worst that would happen if we don't make the deadline for 25? Mm-hmm. We don't make the deadline. But we will have something to show for it. And I'm not saying that we won't make the deadline. I'm not saying that it's not wasted effort. Everything that we do here is going to make whatever we currently have better. It's just like accreditation. An agency may not become accredited, but that process in itself benefits the agency. So that's kind of how I look at it. And I also look at it a little bit differently. You're going to spend time in this process of disaster funding recovery, if we do have an event, regardless, how do you want to spend that time? If we spend a little bit of time on the front end like this and put as front end load or preload as much of this as we can, when we do have an event, that's all taken care of. We can focus in other areas that maybe we don't have as much capability. So it's just a matter of reality. It's amazing to me that the state of Florida even came up with this idea, that it's really a good idea, which is unusual for the state of Florida sometimes. I don't think it's a state. My wife works there, so I know. But this really, on the surface, I'd say, look, it's worth willing to try.
Yeah. Let me make one more comment. And one comment I want to make, and when this was on the Florida League of Cities webinar, the mayor from Sanibel was on there, and she was the one talking about this program. Their cost for debris removal, and I said this last month, and I'm going to say it again, was over $100 million to remove debris. Imagine what one item of $100 million would do to this town. And that's what really piqued my interest, and then I started digging into it. So the speed of getting our monies back in our hands, where we don't have to pull from reserves and move things around, it makes sense. The only thing that doesn't make sense is the time for us right now. Did that make up for anything, Kim?
But, you know,
she has a smile on her face. Yeah. Look at her. She's got a smile on her face.
But as you said, there's not a negative consequence if we don't make the deadline, and we start the process, and it makes the analogy is excellent that it's like our accreditation. It's something we keep working towards, and that's what we do here. We just keep trying to make ourselves better. So that's how I'm comfortable with moving forward. Joe, do you have anything you wish to add?
I think that we should opt into the FROC training course because that gives us the opportunity to review and analyze all the forms that are used. It also gives us access to the forms. So even though we missed the other two deadlines, we haven't missed this last deadline to opt in for the training. Once we get our hands on the forms, we can analyze it over the coming months and then make a firm decision how we move forward with it. But we're taking advantage up front of a gift.
A gift. I agree. That's good. Now, anyone in the public wish to say anything, ask any questions? Okay. Someone want to make a motion? And I think we need a motion to opt in, don't we?
Yes.
All right. I'll make the motion. I move to opt that the town of Ponce Inlet opt into the Florida Department of Emergency Management Florida Recovery Obligation Calculation Program.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. And we are now down to item 14, comments from our council members. Council Member Villanella, you are up. Joe, any comments for us this evening? This afternoon? No?
Just another gangbuster session. I mean, we are...
Well, that's good to hear, Joe. Thank you. Skip?
Yes, ma'am. I know you're surprised. And I will shorten this up a lot because we're getting close on time. But I did attend the TPO meeting on April 24th, and Ponce Inlet was actually the topic of one discussion, and it was our mobility sidewalk project, which it was on. It's projected for 2026 at $6.1 million. I want to thank the council, I wasn't on it at the time, for upping our match where we did move up the, I'll call it the totem pole, but move up the sheet to get included upon getting the sidewalk program because there were other municipalities at the program and they asked the question, how did you guys do it? And our chairman from Volusia County was there, and he made a comment that, well, they upped the ante. They went up another 10%. Maybe you guys should think about doing the same thing. So, and I did share with them our $10.4 million grant on sewer. I said we were very fortunate because, again, things will be working hand-in-hand, sewer to septic, and I mean septic to sewer, and then our sidewalk project. I'd like to thank Chief Glazer and our police department for the pedestrian awareness crossover operation. I was involved in that. He didn't know it was in the car. I was in a loaner car, so he didn't recognize my car. But I do appreciate that. That's something that's come up a couple times at the TPO, and you guys did a great job on that. I'm going to save that one till last. I actually had, let me find my note here. I had a conversation at the very beginning of the week, and I was hoping our Turtle Patrol ladies would still be here. There has been some concern from our Turtle Patrol here in Ponce Inlet about the coastal zone control line, and it's our conservation line, and that is to the south of the drive beach. And where I'm going with this is if you look at after the last hurricane we had, the parking signs were moved up to within 30 feet of the dunes and vegetation. Well, before turtle season on May 1, they're supposed to be relocated back 30 feet from where they were originally placed based on the growth of the dunes and the vegetation line. I know all this because I spent a lot of time reading 280 pages of our habitat coastal control presentation that Volusia County did back in 1986, and the reason I say that was a lot of reading, but I found out a lot of good information in there. So I contacted Jessica Fentress. And, of course, she sent me over to Ginger Adair. And Ginger is actually the, what is her official title, Environmental Management Director. And I've shared the emails with Michael. If I get involved in something like this, I'll make sure Michael's got me covered. But what the outcome was, they continued to state that those parking posts had been relocated, and they had not. I explained to them, we walk the beach every day, and it happens. And then they said, well, it's an average of 30 feet, not 30 feet, which didn't make a lot of sense to me. And I was explained to them that word average is not in their document, their habitat document for the state. Then they came back and said, well, we did as a straight line. You know, this morning I go out and I take a picture of the post, and it clearly shows where if you go midway down and go straight to the jetty, it's straight. If you come back to the north, it actually heads due west, which makes those posts about 5 feet max away from the dunes. People have been climbing on the dunes. They've been destroying the vegetation. So long story short, Ginger called me this morning. We talked through the situation. Instead of we stopped all the emails, which I'm glad I had documentation. But they're going to move those poles. So that's a win for Ponce Inlet. It's a win for our Turtle Patrol. They're going to start. I think I'm going to be out of town on the weekend. They're going to call me Tuesday morning. They're going to meet with me out there, and we're going to look at those. So, again, it's a win for Ponce Inlet. Which leads me to the last piece. I'm going to be very.
I want to thank you for that first. Thank you, Skip. Go ahead.
Okay. And I'm going to read this one. It has come to my attention that our Volusia County Board Chairman has started discussion about opening up more vehicle driving on our beaches in Volusia County. One location that I've been told would be possible of opening up beach driving from Beach Street North to exit at Racing's North Turn. This has been discussed as possibility, only being in effect during Racing's North Turn annual racing parade. I have concerns about this possibility. I feel this is something the town council and Ponce Inlet needs to keep in front of. This topic may be on the next Volusia County Council meeting, May 21st. I will be attending. But I want to put that out there because I have fears. If you give them an inch, they take a mile. We have a great working relationship with Volusia County, in my opinion. But it's just like the post. I had to prove to them that those posts had not been moved. I had to quote from 280 pages of documents why they were wrong. And they're the experts. So I'm concerned if we let one single thing like this slide by and say, oh, it's for Racing's North Turn. And they're not talking about just allowing the cars on there. They're talking about allowing public on there to drive on the beach, to park on the beach, supposedly for that one event, potentially. They also mentioned Main Street, which I'm not sure the roads that are up there. But I strongly feel like we have way too many cars on the beach right now. So I hope that the council will talk about this and give Mr. Disher some direction.
Let me take it right from there. First of all, thank you, and I am aware of this. And what I would like to do is, I'm glad you're going to go to the council meeting on May 21st. We'll know when the agenda comes out a week before. What I think we need by consensus is permission to write a letter, number one, about opposition that we feel for this. Alternatively, or in addition, if you're going to be there, I would like to give you the authority and anyone else to speak on this issue. I will be in Washington, D.C., which I'll explain in a little bit. I don't know if our manager will attend as well, but I do believe that speaking as a council member on behalf of our residents is what I would like you to do is have someone get on the record first. What is the reason for this? Because if it is for parking, which I believe is what it is, he's saying there was, because he said, Chairman Brower has said this all along, he couldn't get a parking spot when he came down here. So if he can articulate the reason he wants this, then we can find a less invasive manner to accomplish the same goal. So he's saying there was insufficient parking. I say if we reached out to our business community on that for that Saturday morning, people could park at 7-Eleven, they could park at Jerry's, maybe they could park on the property that's used for reggae next door, and you could walk to the beach, or perhaps shuttles could be set up. My goal, if I were there, would be to find an alternate way to accomplish what Chairman Brower is saying is needed. I do agree, take the inch. The other problem is the incidental take permit could be at risk. All driving could stop in Volusia if we violate. Are they saying that it's okay to kill our turtles in that area? Ponce Inlet is the mitigation for the incidental take permit. So what I'd like to do is let's give the authority that's necessary to address this. And what do you think of the ideas? Go find parking somewhere else in town. Our business community would step up for this. Yeah. Don't you think?
Yes, Mayor, 100%. And at the State of Volusia County address, Chairman Brower stood up there and said it's time for Volusia County to take control of the coastal construction control line from the state of Florida. That was his exact words. And that cannot happen.
Well, Bill?
Remember, he lives on a farm.
I understand.
So the authority, Mike, do you have any suggestions or Ryan? Because, I mean, I'm not going to be there. Skip is going to be there. You might be there. I don't know if the rest. What is the best way for us to?
I'll be at graduation.
You're at graduation. What would you suggest the best way to move forward?
Yeah, a letter would certainly be appropriate.
Okay.
And if we can draft that, then we can send that to the county manager.
Okay, and that would probably be appropriate as soon as the agenda comes out.
It comes out, a week ahead of time. As soon as we get that and see that, we can send that letter in.
Okay. Then they would get that letter, and Skip would be there, and Skip would stand up and speak on behalf of...
Absolutely.
It would be, I want the consensus is to give him the authority to speak.
You've got it.
You've got it. You know
because
where
remember,
we feel.
Because remember, that whole area was a drive-on beach back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Up until the 80s, and the fact that they were starting to have a turtle problem, that's when it became a non-drive-on beach. It was a drive-on beach.
Well, and the thing is that I just don't know if it's appropriate to reach out to our business community now or wait for after, but the reality is they've always been very accommodating in these circumstances.
The vacant lot I think I can take care of.
You think you can take care of that?
Yeah, I can handle that one.
So I think we know what we're going to do. Thank you for bringing that up, Skip.
Okay.
And And our Councilman Reinhart knows exactly the way we feel about it. That has already been communicated to him. I appreciate you bringing it up, Skip, and thank you very much for being at that meeting.
Okay.
So thank you.
And the last thing I have is actually last month was my first 6 months on the council, and it has been a blast.
So well,
thank you for the staff, the support, and for the council.
We are so happy to have you here.
And it's fun working with you occasionally.
Yeah,
Bill, you have anything to share?
Oh, yeah. Just a couple. It's a shame Mark left because I can remember when Bill Wester and Ed Jackson and Jim Hinton all had gotten together as the group of nine to start the whole concept of the memorial for our veterans. And I can remember how Ed started beating on doors and getting the money. My block is row 6, I think, in the first space to the north. I mean, they were tenacious in getting people to participate, and they did a great job. So I'm really pleased that Mark came up with the concept of putting the block up. Just one thing I wanted to do on the First Step Shelter. I told you last month about the uptake of the 65 and older people coming into the shelter because the rents became so high. Well, we've had 20 seniors in the shelter since January. We still have 11 in the program. We hope to have 5 seniors, these 65 and above, in housing this month through the RAD program. But this was an interesting one. This year, we've had a 260% increase in the uptake. You ready for this? 18 to 24-year-old homeless. 18 to 24 homeless. All the ones that have come into the shelter have jobs, but none of them have the ability to be able to rent to get into housing. So part of the shelter, as you know, is with their jobs, they're now in housing with us, they get 3 meals a day, and they are capable now of saving one half of their salary. And we're hoping that in another few months we'll be able to start placing them in housing. So one more time, and the last thing is the law enforcement has been using, we haven't, but the law enforcement has been using our safe zone. Remember they were talking earlier about having a location, the new state law with homeless and everything? We have a location. Ponce Inlet has a location. It is called the safe zone or the First Step Shelter. As I told you last month, the land has now joined the shelter. We now have New Smyrna, Port Orange, Daytona Beach, Daytona Beach Shores, Ponce Inlet. Edgewater is right now on the east side, the only municipality that's not part of the shelter, and the safe zone. And we're still at 94% that have been in housing for at least 2 years. And we are now up to 263,611 meals we've served in 4 years.
Oh, that's great, Bill. Thank you. The first thing I would like to address is whether we wish to have a town hall meeting in August, and if so, potential topics. The issues could include our traffic and parking. Perhaps we could have our police chief and Lieutenant Cobb speak with us. Also, Ponce preserves the Planet Earth Day celebration. That was wonderful, and it provided a significant opportunity for education relating to the environmental issues we have here and wildlife concerns that our residents care very deeply about. I'm wondering whether we could consider a wider audience at a town hall meeting for education, maybe 10-minute presentations by at least three of the vendors who were there. They were wonderful. Volusia Turtle Patrol, Protecting Sea Turtles, Save the Manatees, Protecting Our Manatees, and Florida Forest Service, Protecting the Trees. You know, we have our other issues, septic to sewer, flooding issues. We can come up with an agenda, but I just want to know if you all are amenable to a meeting, because then we can ask town hall, we can ask that a date be suggested to us. Okay? Town hall's good, right?
Yeah.
So could I leave that by with?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing I did want to share with you is I'm representing our town in Washington, D.C. at the American Flood Coalition during the week of May 20th. Because of our resilience work, the work of the council, the work of the staff, the support of our residents, I was selected to be the individual to actually to be the person from the state of Florida to give an interview on what we've done, but that's because of what we've done. We were ahead of the curve on a number of things, so I'm very proud to represent the town in general, but really proud of our resiliency work. The significance, really, of being asked as the elected official, it's just how proactive we've been. I say it all the time, but we have been proactive in resilience. Additionally, because our town has been instrumental in addressing animal welfare, whether through our resolution with Ponce's Law, you remember, and how we completely revised our animal welfare ordinances a few years ago, and also work that we did on an animal abuser database for Volusia County. I was asked to be a panelist at the Florida Bar Association's annual convention in June to address current issues in animal law. And I'm there as the mayor of the town of Ponce Inlet on the kind of work elected officials can do to help in animal welfare. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm sitting alongside of State Senator Jennifer Bradley, Florida Senior State Director for the Humane Society of the United States, Kate McFaul, and Government Relations Attorney Diana Ferguson. The title of our panel is Florida Legislative and Local Government Panel. So I thank the council for that as well, because it was the work that we did over all those years that put me in a position to have that opportunity. So I thank you, and I thank the staff and our residents for all of that. Okay, and now we move on to our town manager.
All right, thank you. Yeah, just a couple updates here. First, I did want to give you an update on the sidewalk project. So staff had an opportunity to meet with county staff, which, as you know, we've have an agreement with Volusia County to essentially for them to administer this project on the town's behalf. That's needed to qualify for the kind of federal funding that's going to be granted. Their update was they have selected a surveyor, and they will start surveying probably within a couple months or so. We, meaning the town, will be sending out a letter probably about 2 weeks before that starts, just to let everyone know along the route that that's going to occur. So they're expecting the whole thing with the surveying to take, I believe they said, like from June through maybe October or so. But anyway, I just want to let you know that that's going to be starting up fairly soon. An additional update from Public Works. They are also in the having design plans done for the pond excavation that was approved in this year's budget. So that is expected to be completed later this month. And then after that, they're going to put the work out to bid. And then construction will start in August. All right. Jessica Fentress and Clay Irvin from Volusia County will be making a presentation at the Volusia Elected Officials Roundtable. That's next Monday, the May 13th, about turtle nesting season and coastal construction. So that's a meeting that's open to the public. It's at the airport on the second floor meeting room, so anyone's invited to attend that. Let's see, we're organizing a special joint council meeting with the planning board either on June 3rd or June 4th, and that's to talk about the watershed master plan. We're very excited to see this completed. I've been reviewing the draft of this thing. It's quite a piece of work. I mean, it's over 1,000 pages, and that includes all the tables and graphs and maps and all kinds of stuff. So it's an extremely thorough piece of work. If you remember, this is something we'd initially applied for the grant for this thing back in 2020, but then it got shifted into a different program through the state. We were finally able to get the grant agreement January of last year and select the consultant, and they have been working on it ever since. So it's dual purpose. It's not only a vulnerability assessment focused on stormwater drainage, but is also going to be used to help improve the town's community rating system, or CRS, flood insurance. That is a prerequisite, having this plan, to increasing our rating beyond a 5. And so we hope to get to a 4, and each time you go up in a rating, that's an additional 5% flood insurance discount for people that are in a flood zone. So anyway, we want this meeting to have both both boards, the board and the council there to review and hopefully accept this thing, because the deliverable deadline from the state of Florida is end of June. So we just have that meeting at the beginning of June. That'll be give us a chance for any last revisions, and we could submit that and then receive our grant reimbursement for that. Okay, and then I just want to update you. Staff is already having our internal meetings and discussions on hurricane preparation for this next season. You know, it's every year we get a little bit better at this, and so we're having those initial discussions. We had a meeting last week, kind of a kickoff meeting, you know, just make sure we have all our documents, procedures in order, and that sort of thing. So I'll be happy to answer any questions you have about any of that or anything else that was on the report.
Thank you, Mike. Mm-hmm. Anything from our attorney?
No, I have some homework to do, and we'll get you a memo here in the coming weeks.
Well, we appreciate that, and thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we are down to our two-minute citizen participation on any matters that were just discussed in agenda items 14, 15, and 16, the comments from counsel, our manager, and the attorney. Does anyone wish to speak? Yes, Jim.
Everybody left. Jim Suster, 4650 Links Village Drive. Not to beat a dead horse, but I invite everybody to go take a walk over the walkway and see how many planks have ever been redone or the railings for yourselves. And I also recommend that you go to the neighbors to the north and knock on their doors and see what they think of the CSA, because when you make your decision, not on how much money to give them, but I hope you take in consideration character also. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Is there anyone else who wishes to comment on any of the town council members' comments, attorney, town manager? If not, at 4:58, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.